You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network.
Are you sure?
Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. Bernie's wallet. It's a key to a safety deposit. And now for the podcast.
That's the $2 million that Lomax stole.
It's noted as a personal entry account.
What does it mean,
Richard? Only one who could get in is Bernie Lomax personally, and well, he's kind of dead right now.
We go back to the morgue, we get the body, we go to St. Thomas, no. We take Bernie to the bank.
So they're packing him up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospectives. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me this week is... I guess you're now my co-host, because you've been on here so many times.
Howdy doody, y'all.
Justin Mayhew. First of all, thank you for coming on for multiple times. Thank you for doing that.
No problem.
Basically, continuing my Summer of 93 special. So, Justin, what are we talking about today?
One of those classic golden oldies that you've probably heard about a bunch of times, and maybe you've seen... Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes. So to clue you in, listeners, Weekend at Bernie's came out in 1989, and it was a somewhat successful movie.
It was $15 million budget, and they made 30 or 40 back, something like that.
Yeah. So it was... And a lot of people kind of remember the premise more than the actual like movie itself, or if that's what I kind of take out of it. They kind of remember more of what remember more of the idea rather than like any of the characters or any of the actors. Because I mean, up until a week ago, I didn't know Andrew McCarthy or Jonathan Silverman existed.
Oh yeah,
no,
they were big in the '80s. Here's the thing. I know Andrew McCarthy primarily from Weekend at Bernie's, which I did see around about the time that it first came out, you know. But he was in St. Elmo's Fire. He was in Pretty in Pink, which I don't recall him at all from those films. The film that I recall him from is Weekend at Bernie's.
Okay. Yeah, so... going into this, I had no... And I think John Silverman was on a TV show in NBC. Sometime in the 90s, but anyway, you're probably wondering to yourself, Youth Critic, why are we talking about a movie from 1989 that was like a mild cult success from 1989? Well, to clue you in, listeners, there was a sequel. A sequel to Weekend at Bernie's. I know, you're all shocked to hear.
With the amazingly creative title of Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Roman numeral 2.
Yes.
And that one came out on July 9th, 1993. So, for that, we are going to be talking about not only Weekend at Bernie's 2, but we're going to be talking about Weekend at Bernie's 1. So, Justin, why don't you clue everyone in on your thoughts on Weekend at Bernie's 1, and we'll kind of just go from there.
It's not a well-made movie. You know, it's a very straightforward movie. I think it's funny. I actually enjoy it. I find a quite a bit of amusement in many of the gags. There's a lot of physicality in the role. For instance, at the scene where Paulie finally comes back and is attacking Larry, Richard, and Gwen at the house after he's finally convinced he's killed Bernie.
Twice in a row.
This is like the third time.
You know? Yeah.
Larry takes McCarthy takes this phone cord and they have this dance where they start going around each other to classical music, you know, and they do this very intricate thing where they're weaving out and he's putting the line between his legs and wrapping the other guy's legs up, and it's almost like a little ballet, and it's actually very well choreographed and done physical comedy, and they actually do a couple of things in this movie like that. There's actually some good old-fashioned vaudeville, you know, silent film era, Harry Lloyd kind of, you know, silent comedy kind of chopsticks here, you know?
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah, and I actually did kind of like the climax, the fight with, what did you say, Polly?
Polly, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a
Don
good climax.
Don Calfa is the actor, yes. And it's fun, and they have the classical music that he shot the tape deck, uh-huh. So it's kind of coming and going and slowing up and speeding down. And,
right. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually found that kind of entertaining.
Night on Bald Mountain, I believe, is one of the parts. And they finally proved to Gwen that Bernie's dead by dragging him down the stairs by his feet.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorite things for me is this is my introduction to the Italian curse, Cornuto.
What does that mean?
It's the horned one. It's a devil. You know, the devil sign.
Oh, okay.
So you're cursing. You know, it's either one or two things. You're cursing them as a devil, or they go to the devil because they're, you know, cheating on your wife or whatever. You know, so it's an Italian. You know, it's an Italian curse, right? Cornuto on you. So I've just cursed you. See?
Oh no!
Yeah. And being that I was a heavy, big, huge heavy metal head in the 80s and early 90s, you know, of course, anything with that is like, right on, brother.
Of course.
You know?
Oh, of course, yeah. So, I don't really like any of these movies. I posted on Twitter and my Facebook, basically, you know, 20 minutes into the movie where I was like...
I remember.
Where I was like, so guys, when does this movie get good? Because I'm like, so far, I'm annoyed... to a living fuck of Andrew McCarthy, and Jonathan Silverman is like playing like a combination of Dave Patel and Daniel O'Brien before they were even born.
Yeah, they are doing a very intense form of the comic rapscallion and the straight guy, you know, with his
right.
foil. They're doing a very extreme version of that.
Yeah, and. And the shtick is just not funny because Andrew McCarthy just, like, is nothing but a psychopath. Or he just becomes even more and more fucking, you know, insane by, like, giving Bernie drinks. And I'm like, you realize this person is fucking dead. Like, really? Like, this... And also, like, as I was thinking... Because I knew about the premise of Weekend at Bernie's. Mm. I knew what this was gonna. I knew that it was about like two guys are gonna have to, you know, somehow like, you know, convince everyone a dead guy is like alive just long enough to like get through a weekend or whatnot. I knew that was the premise of the movie.
Right.
And I've seen kind of the premise like in a bunch of parody skits, like on Robot Chicken. I think SNL did one or two of them, and then I think Alfred Hitchcock did one similar to that.
Well, that was earlier. He did that in the 60s, early 70s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, and this was going to base off of Alfred Hitchcock.
Right. I think this came from Hitchcock. It was The Trouble with Harry was the name of the
right.
film.
Right.
Yes.
And I think the problem with the movie was the reason to keep the image alive of Bernie being alive or keep it going that, you know, that Bernie's alive, he's just like a little wasted. It was just like, it was very much like a nothing thing to like get over. It's like, so let me get this straight. You want to pretend he's alive because you want to keep the party going and get laid. That's your excuse.
That's for Larry. Richard's excuse that he keeps going is that he doesn't want to upset Gwen. And second, he assumes that the killers are still out to get them. So if Bernie's alive, then it might scare off the
killer. Yeah, but that whole thing doesn't come into until, like, the end of the second act.
Right, but that is one of the motivations, to keep him looking alive so they might scare off any potential assassins, right?
Yeah, but even by that logic, it's kind of...
Oh, sure, it's bullshit. It's complete bullshit. And I don't care.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing you have to...
Yeah, you have to suspend a lot of disbelief in this movie.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue is... Because I was thinking, you know, after watching the movie, the first one, basically, you know, what could have really just made this better was, you know, instead of keeping him alive to keep the party going or, you know, not upsetting Gwen, you know, why don't you just make it about, like, you have this big deal coming up with this, you know, one investor, and you need him alive to sign over the money to start your own, you know, startup business. I mean, this is the 80s. Everyone's trying to start up, something. And,
yeah. And that is another thing that's annoying about Larry is he's a distillation of that ladies' guy. that 80s guy, sorry, you know, like Wall Street. What's his name? The Michael Douglas character from Wall Street?
Gordon Gekko.
Oh, Gordon. He's like a Gordon Gekko. Or the 80s guy from Futurama, the episode where Fry becomes enamored of the 80s guy who came to the future. And they're this, you know, hardcore lone wolf, and we're going to, you know, absorb everything, and we're going to become these great, powerful guys. He's got a similar kind of mindset. He definitely has an 80s kind of, you know, grab the gold ring kind of mindset, you know, right?
Yeah, and that's going to be our key to happiness and success. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very much in, you know, ingrained into the 80s ideology, mm-hmm. is that, or in, especially in the baby boomers and the Gen Xers, is that we must, you know, go out and make every dime, you know, possible.
Right.
And the hell with how we do it. You know, well, it'll be a funnier story, you know, when we get to tell it later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it amounts to. And I think the problem with, and I think that's where I was thinking, you know, why not do a story like that? Like, let's get them to have the big deal. And they kind of need him alive for the whole weekend long enough to, like, till like Monday when they have like a big investment meeting and they have to like convince the board that, yeah, we're going to give them this amount of money to do this.
Well, interestingly, loosely, the second one actually sort of does that. They need to keep them alive to find the money, which is closer.
And that's why I kind of give the second one a little bit of a nudge, because it's like, oh, you finally did something. You have finally like a reason to do this premise.
Yeah. The premise of the first one is paper thin.
Oh, but it's basically just there to have a bunch of gags.
Right. And I actually do appreciate most of the gags. And I appreciate Terry Kaiser's performance, especially since he did a lot of his own stunts himself. And I heard that he either, you know, broke or bruised his ribs during one of those falls off of the house. That he actually was doing his own stunts and got himself damaged, you know, and he's committed to this role, you know.
Yeah, it's a...
And that house. Mm.
It's a committed performance. Yeah. I mean, there were parts where I'm like, why didn't you just use a dummy?
Yeah, I think they used a dummy occasionally, like the inadvertent skiing, water skiing.
Okay.
That was a dummy. But I think the rest of the time, it's almost all Terry Kaiser and occasionally a stunt double. But it's almost always Terry Kaiser doing those crazy, ridiculous things.
It is, and on surface level, you're thinking, okay, this is a easy performance because all you have to do is just like not just be limber.
Yeah.
But no, here's the thing. It's actually, you know, much tougher just to sit there and just be like, not breathe, you know, not blink, not, you know, hold the same expression you gave in your death scene.
That little weird, quirky little, you know, grin is like, man, my face would be so sore after months of shooting that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it helped that they, you know, put sunglasses on, so sometimes you don't see him blinking, sometimes you do. It just depends on...
Yeah.
I think nowadays you can kind of tell because the HD transfers of quality
Yeah, you can see his eyes quite clearly behind the sunglasses. Yeah. But to me, you know, these are quibbles. I mean, I've never seen a movie that didn't have mistakes, you know.
Right. Well, I think at the time they were thinking it wouldn't get picked up because they were looking through the viewfinder, the films.
Yeah, and they were assuming that it was going to go straight to video at first.
Really?
Yeah. The Ted Kotcheff was speaking to somebody, and I got the impression from him that he thought it was going to go straight to video, that they weren't even going to do a release. So it was going to be all, you know, small screen, you know, SD, you know. And you know,
yeah, now we have like HD Blu-ray.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there's a 4K transfer yet of this movie, but I mean, it's probably going to happen eventually. And you're going to probably see, we're going to probably see a bunch of mistakes.
Yep.
A bunch of little things that we didn't see before.
I'm sure. They're already there.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's already some moments where I could tell that Kaiser was like moving his eyes or something. Or
I just like the film holds up, not because it's, you know, a serious film, you know, that there's really no plot to speak of, but I enjoy the you know, ludicrousness and the gag kind of, you know, carefree kind of gag appeal. There's you know, that and Terry Kaiser's, you know, fun performance as a dead guy, which he's doing a lot of acting. And the house that they built specifically for this movie, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful house.
And they tore it down right after the movie was done.
Damn.
They built it for because they built it in a wildlife refuge, so they couldn't leave it. They built it in North Carolina in a wildlife sanctuary. So they built it just for the movie, And when they're done filming, tore it right back down again. The only thing that I was interested in to find out that I couldn't was whether it was a full-on active location set or was it merely a facade that they shot the interiors in a studio somewhere, you know? And I haven't been able to verify.
It looks like it's all...
On location, it does, yeah.
Because there's so many, like, shots of them, like, outside peering in.
Yeah.
I mean... You and I both know there are camera tricks to this. There are ways they could have, you know.
So I can't verify that they actually shot the entire thing on the beach in that house. But it does look an awful lot like they did. And they built that house just for that purpose.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you built that house, then, you know, why not use it? Like, you know. And also, I mean, $15 million back then, like, yeah, that's not a lot of money, but, I mean, you could still build a location with that
money. Right, and it's not the cheapest film ever, you know. It's a lower mid-level budget.
The Lost Boys cost, like, half of this, so.
And the second Bernie's cost half of this.
Oh, yeah, I'm betting.
Yeah, they went for $15 million and had a decent hit. Then they went down to $7 million as a budget.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not even on that on Box Office Mojo.
Yeah.
That's so weird because, you know, we think of nowadays, okay, the sequel's going to cost more because, you know, actors are coming back. But it's like, oh, it's half the budget. I'm like, and I can't tell it at all.
Right, right.
I don't know if that's because the actors just took a massive, like, pay less than they already had on the first one or what. But, I mean, this one felt, like, bigger.
I think that they might have gotten away with shooting on, you know, existing locations that, you know, building the house on the Wildlife Refuge probably cost a good portion of the budget in the first one, you know.
Right.
Right? So they didn't have to construct an entire... I think they just went to the St. Thomas in the American Virgin Islands.
Uh-huh.
And it was probably cheaper for crew and cheaper for film and cheaper for lodging there. So they basically got the equivalent of the Georgia tax break.
Incentives back then?
No, I think it's just cheaper. It's generally that, you know, lower wages, lower rents, lower equipment costs to shoot in the Virgin Islands, I think. It's my guess, you know.
All right, because I haven't looked up the where they shot it either, but... Yeah,
Miss New York and the rest of us was actually in... The American Virgin Islands. So
that's interesting because, I mean, you would think that would be even expensive too. Because, I mean, you're right. Like, yeah, there's not the labor is not that much there, but still, like, getting, you know, all that equipment across the sea and, you know, getting all that, you know, down there and crew, cast, it all still costs money. But you know what? Maybe they went from like a 60-day schedule or 60 or 80-day schedule to like a 30 to 40-day schedule.
Yeah, I don't know how long it took them to shoot both films. But to me, I mean, I can actually see a budget difference in the second one. For me, it does look like because they use some stock footage at the beginnings and stuff like that of the islands. They just have, you know.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's like they were making the the montage of them going to the St. Virgins or the Virgin Islands.
Yep.
I noticed, like, yeah, this looks like a different grain of film than...
Yeah, they're just using stock footage and stuff to set up establishing. So I think they cut... That was a corner they could cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had, like, a minute at a time where they would just have stock footage of the islands.
And sometimes when Larry is looking out in the bay, you're just seeing, like, the hotel... Stock footage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from like their promotional videos and such.
Yeah. From, yeah.
Before we go too far into Bernie's at Two, I just have to give my admiration for that, you know, set, the house they built, purpose-built for this movie.
And it's a nice house.
It's a nice house.
Very well decorated.
They did a great job with it, and they had fun with it, and then in an act of, like, some Viking funeral glory, they just tore the thing down. It doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's sort of a romantic symmetry to that, you know.
It is. I would have hated to be the guy to tell that cast and crew, okay, we got to do reshoots.
Yeah. Well, you had better be darn well sure that you've done with reshoots before you tear that sucker down, right?
I wonder if they, like, gave it, like, a couple months, like, made sure that, you know, things were working out.
I don't know.
But I mean, back then, like, reshoots were not, like, as huge as they were back then.
No, they did still do them, but...
But it's not like you go in and shoot for 10 weeks.
No, if you did reshoots, you could rejigger the scene to set it back in Manhattan. You know,
right?
To just if you have already lost the house, you could just rewrite the scene that they're set in Manhattan instead.
Or you just do a cover set.
Sure. Yeah, you go to a studio quick and do something. Uh-huh. But, yeah, and also the 80s, man, the 1980s. This is 89, so it was almost in the 90s. We're getting to the late 80s here. But some of the weird 80s fashions I thought was pretty groovy. The assassin, played by Don Calfa, Polly, uh-huh. He goes on the island the first time dressed like Don Johnson from Miami Vice with the sleeves pulled up and the T-shirt. And as he's leaving, he pulls the sleeves down. You know, it takes out a Velcro collar and a sun hat, and he becomes a casual priest. I said, that's some good assassin work right there. You got your disguise. I thought it was really cool and fun.
Yeah.
And they're making kind of, you know, poking fun at the 80s fashion. But then there's all these, you know, they have all these models and really attractive actresses in their bikinis to bring in the male viewers. And they all make them, for some reason, wear these spotless, really strange, pure white tennis shoes and socks. And for some reason, it just looks weird to me. You know, when you go to the beach and you're wearing, you know, running gear in a weird, you know, uncomfortable-looking bikini, it just seemed kind of incongruous to me.
Yeah,
80s weird fashion, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I didn't notice that too much, but, I mean, that is an odd thing to wear or to have on.
1980s, man.
Wow. And kind of trying to transition a little bit to two.
Okay.
This one feels very much like it should have, like it's a relic of the 80s.
Yeah, even though it was 93.
Yeah. I mean, we're like in the midst of Jurassic Park. We're in the midst of true 90s. I mean, we're in the Nirvana era.
Yep.
This one feels like they literally just took a day off and started filming. And I guess that was the point because it takes place like afterwards.
Yeah, like just mere days after the first one.
But yeah, but I was still like, man, this movie still looks like this movie looked like it got shot in 1990 and then just shelved for 2 or 3 years.
Right. No, but they actually did shoot it in late 92. So
yeah,
it was. But you're supposed to believe that this happens, you know, within right a week. Yeah, like more than a week after the first one.
Yeah, this is supposed to take place in September of, you know, in New York.
Yeah, early September. Is Labor Day at the beginning of September?
Yes.
Right. So, and the thing that really gets under my skin about this movie, well, I mean, one of them, but is this supposed to be mere days after what happened in the first one, and Gwen is nowhere to be found?
Yeah,
And Richard's character doesn't give two poofs about Gwen all of a sudden.
You know, I mean,
and it really annoys me.
You know, and well, I mean, in the first one, it's mentioned that she was, it was the end of her internship. She was going back to school after the weekend. But he's
talking about how to get back in touch with her. And just a mere 2 days or 3 days later, he's forgotten all about her.
Yeah, and he's like conga dancing with this other girl.
Yeah.
And you're like, didn't you just go through this whole or fucking deal to talk to this other girl?
Yep.
Played by Catherine Marie Stewart, I think.
Somebody like that. Yeah, she was another 80s actress. She was in a lot of comedies.
You literally just jumped through hoops, went through this whole ordeal of, you know, putting up with this dead body.
Yeah.
And getting shot at.
By the potential assassin.
Yeah. And you're just like, and you don't even mention the girl you just like hung out with like 3 days ago.
Dude. Okay. So she was in The Last Starfighter, The Night of the Comet, The Night Flyers. That was a horror movie, I think.
The Weekend Apple.
Was that?
The Apple.
The Apple. Was she in The Apple? Yes, she was in The Apple. Wow. I mean, she was in everything.
Yeah. But, man, I was just like, that kind of threw me off. And then Andrew McCarthy looked a little chubbier, looked a little bit more doughier.
Yeah, he still looks like a dying plague victim whenever he puts that gigantic Rolex watch on his wrist. And see how much, man, that guy's a small fella.
He is. And he's still annoying as fuck.
And to be fair, he's supposed to be an annoying, you know, they're trying to make him like the you know, aw shucks kind of rapscallion kind of a character. You know what I mean?
But the problem is
they take it too far.
Yeah, and that's the issue is that he's so annoying that you're wondering why does Richard want to even like hang out with this person?
Yeah, I mean it's been nothing but trouble. You know that because of Larry, Richard's gotten
fired,
shot at, fired, almost killed, almost poisoned, accused of being a gay guy who wants to sex change operation. Hang around with a dead body all weekend against his will. Yeah, nothing good has come of it. He still hangs around with him.
Yeah, I'm like, why are you hanging with this person anymore? Like, this is absurd. Like, after you get fired, that would be like the breaking point, because you had went through this whole ordeal, this whole weekend with this asshole who just basically is just fucking psychotic. Mm-hmm. And when you are meeting him at the restaurant, and you're like, no, I'm done. I mean, he is fucking paying an expensive dinner with a credit card.
Mm-hmm. And he stole from a dead man. Yep.
Yeah. You're like, why? Why be with this person?
Yeah, and outside of actually hunting down the physical money, their caper to go to the bank with Bernie makes no sense. Larry's been impersonating Bernie for a few days now. All he has to do is go with his ID cards and sign his name and show a credit card or something to show that he's Bernie, and they'll let him have the box. They don't even actually need Bernie to get to the bank.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, but Barry Bostwick, the guy that goes insane, he's the assurance adjuster. He's the guy that thinks they stole the millions and he's chasing them around.
Right.
Barry Bostwick, the guy that goes insane at the end of the movie. He's actually Brad from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh.
Yeah, he's Brad and Janet.
I was wondering where I was thinking of him from.
He was in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Because I was like, that dude looks so familiar.
Well, now you know. Brad Majors from the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay. But, yeah, that was my... So, I guess my thoughts on Weekend at Bernie's 2, it's a little better because there's actually a plot kind of moving things along. It's a dumb one.
Yes. And, boy, this movie looks so much cheaper to me, though. The film stock looks cheaper.
You know? Well, I mean, they probably, like, were using the last remnants of film stock that was... Of that, like, amount of pixels that was from the 80s.
Yeah.
Which worked in their benefit because the movie looks like it actually was from the 80s, even though it was shot in the 90s.
1992.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Like the cheap gag with the rubber parrot on his shoulder.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's dumb. And it looks...
Dumb.
And it looks cheaper. And Terry Kaiser, God bless you, you are really giving a performance... Yep.
It's this movie is dumb as fuck, and you know what? I still fucking laughed at it.
I still laugh at zombie Bernie.
Yeah, with an arrow with a harpoon through his head.
Yeah, and I'm like,
hey, yeah, let's all conga. Let's all do the dead man, right? Let's do it. Let's do the dead man.
The dead man.
We should do a music video, some neopunk band, you know, like a post Green Day.
By the way, whatever happened to Bernie's corpse at the end of the two?
At the end of two, he joins the carnival. He goes to carnival, people.
Yep. Oh, you're right.
He goes to carnival.
Yeah. Oh, we should also mention like why he's a zombie, Bernie.
The Mobu brings him back to life.
With like a curse that basically is like, you're going to show us the money, which I don't know how you use magic to... That way, but sure, fuck
right.
it.
What it's supposed to be is that with the chicken, and they have a musical spell, and he comes back to life and walks, always walks in the direction of the money. You know, wherever he's at, he's going to walk in the cardinal direction. You just follow him, and he'll take you as a straight as possible line to the money. He'll just walk right to the money. Mm-hmm. That's what the idea is. But since they use the pigeon, he can only walk with music. So.
Right. Wait, how does a pigeon in a muse? I don't get the joke of the pigeon.
The idea was that it was supposed to be a chicken.
Uh-huh.
That they lost the chicken and they substituted a pigeon, so they've altered the spell. So now he can't walk, he can only dance to the money now.
Okay.
That's what the idea was. And notice these two, the New Yorkers that the Mobu acquires to go and get Bernie, clean him the money, are sort of like... Richard and Larry again, aren't they? They're so like this pair of mismatched weirdos that you know. I find an echo of Richard and Larry in these two characters from New York. The schmoes that she finds, you know, to go track down Bernie.
Yeah, and then and the Mobu, I guess Mobu. Oh God. Okay.
It the sense. See, the first film didn't have a plot. The second one has a plot, but it makes absolutely no sense.
So okay.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the like, and that's what I will give Bernie too a little credit for is that they have a plot. They have like a direction to go for, because in the first one, it's this. Let's just do random gags with this body, mm-hmm. and then and we'll make the movie around that. We'll figure mm-hmm. out like different ways to connect it all, but that's the movie. And that's kind of been my kind of issue with the movie is it feels like a series of skits strung together by like very loose connective
tissue.
I've
seen a lot of comedies that do that.
Yeah.
That they don't have an actual through line of any sort.
Right.
It's really just a series of vignettes.
Right.
Of things, yes.
And I understand
it's
like...
It's a very common problem in comedies, it looks like.
Yeah. And I understand like, you know, if it's funny, why does it matter? But, you know, but still it's like... The movie, but for those that don't really think it's a funny movie...
He's got a chicken in his pocket.
But the thing is, if it's not funny, then who cares? You know, if it's not funny, then your whole movie is falling apart. And now you're relying on two actors, Andrew McCarthy, you're relying on two actors that really don't have, like, charisma. Like, I don't think any of them have good charisma at all. Like, I think Jonathan Silverman is... Like, he's a good face, but he's kind of bland as fuck. And then Andrew McCarthy, you know, is just a one-trick pony. Like, all he is just like, I am energy. I am a cartoon.
Yeah,
and I'm moving around like a cartoon.
And it becomes exaggerated. Like, in the first one... It
becomes animated,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, in the first one, he's, you know, pretty greedy and self-serving. But in the second one, boy, do they bring it up. Like, he's diving off of a crashing vehicle to chase down money in the air. Money! And he actually, like a gleeful three-year-old child, starts screaming, money! And flying off a crashing vehicle to chase money. And
yeah.
They've kind of taken that one note of that character and put a crapload of methamphetamines into it. You know?
Yeah. And that's kind of my whole thing about, yeah. Like...
Oh, I definitely know there's issues with these movies.
Yeah, and then, you know, so Mobu wants this money because the mob also wants this money, too. The mob from the first movie. They want this money. So they are... So she sends these two guys that are kind of like the black version of Larry and Richard to go to New York, go get the body, but then the body gets lost.
Like
and,
twice.
Yeah. And yeah, it just becomes this whole thing, and then somehow they find it again with, you know, the other Larry yeah. and Richard.
Yeah, and when Bernie's body gets thrown out windows, run over by vehicles, shot in the head with harpoon guns, crushed into refrigerators, stomped on, run over, flown about, held in suitcases for days at a time. Boy, this is a tough corpse, man.
Yeah, wow. That's decomposing, and they do allude that the
right,
corpse
they have
is stinking.
Scene with the air freshener.
Yeah, they finally allude to the fact that this corpse is finally starting to rot and stink and go through rigor mortis. But still, it's like, but Terry Kaiser, he's got like some good color on him. Like, he's still looking good.
Yeah, he looks like he just went to the beach. You know,
yeah,
got a tan. Nice,
yeah.
Groovy 80s mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And then all this leads to where Richard gets a curse to where if he doesn't find the body or the money or whatever, then, you know, he'll die.
Mm-hmm.
So
by sundown.
Yeah. And here's my problem with... And then the two guys just leave him without even getting their curse lifted off. Or I guess not. Like, I would have, if I'm these two, I'd be like, okay, can you lift the curse off of us? We've done everything we can.
Exactly. In fact, because of the fact that they brought Larry and Richard in, when I first saw the two goats trailing after Bernie at the end, I thought it was going to be Richard and Larry because they had taken the curse on from those two guys.
Right.
You know? I thought they were in the clear because they did what Larry had said, you know, switch the curse around on somebody else, which they had done. And the Mobu accepted. So that should mean that Richard and Larry turn into goats. Should mean.
Yeah.
That Richard and Larry. So when they started talking like the second couple of goofballs from New York City, I was like, no, this doesn't make any sense. They passed the curse on to Larry and Richard.
Yeah. And also, why would you have left them at the hotel if you didn't know if your curse was lifted or not?
Lift. You mean when they dropped them back off the hotel after?
Yeah.
After losing Bernie for like the third time or whatever.
Yeah, nothing makes any sense.
No, like I said, it has a plot. It just has no consistency whatsoever.
That's kind of my problem with Robert Klein. He wrote both movies.
Yeah.
Is that he has these great, he has these gags that he wants to do with the dead body. He's like a sick fuck, essentially.
And he directed the second one.
Yeah.
Too,
so. Mm-hmm.
He didn't direct the first one. Rambo!
First Blood director did the first one. But the, what?
It just leads to a different tone, if I may just quickly interject here. The first one, to me, had more of a tone along the lines of the original Back to the Future movie, a little grounded, a little darker, you know, because, you know, they have a dead body, you know, and you know, in that one, in Back to the Future, he's trying to keep from, you know, having his whole family and himself erased from history because his parents don't get together, right?
Right.
You know, so there's kind of a darkness under that. And the second one has actually, to me, more of like a late Ernest T. Worrell kind of a feel to it. Not fully on, but there's this hint of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of thing going on in the second one, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot more goofball in the second one, it seems to me, you know?
Yeah, it
is. A lot more mugging of the camera, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. And I've been getting comments about the first one. I haven't said anything on Facebook or Twitter about the second one.
Yes, I saw.
But the comments for the, you know, that I had for the first one, I'm like, this is, like, you know, like they've all been like, you know, well, it's basically, you know, the sense, it's really the humor. The sixth sense of humor is getting everyone and just watching basically the scenario play out. That's getting everyone, and I can see to an extent like how, you know, this really, you know, sick premise can be funny, and
you get a little bit of voyeurism, you know,
right?
In it, you know, you get to watch some weird, crazy sicko thing happening, and people love that.
Yeah, but my thing is, I feel like this. If you are going to do this, I feel like it would be more suited to a short film. Because I don't know if you saw the Robot Chicken skit I posted in the comments. Mm-hmm. But Robot Chicken did a whole skit where Hannah Montana gets, like, killed by her fan. But her friends, or I guess it's Miley Dakota or whatever. She gets killed and it's Hannah Montana. Everyone's devastated, but her friends are like, we got to keep the secret about Miley alive long enough to, like, you know, for her to do her exam or be present to do her exam, so no one would confuse or no one would think Hannah that Miley was Hannah the whole time.
Right.
Blah 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 blah. So they do that whole Weekend at Bernie's thing. They run into Lindsay Lohan. they go to a premiere. They do all this stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm like, this is more entertaining than the actual Weekend at Bernie's movie because there's actually, like, a reason, a logical reason to do it. And there's actually, like, funny things, there's actual funny things happening. So, for me, I feel like maybe it should have been. But then again, I told you, like, you know, why not just do, like, instead of it being like, let's do it just so we can have a great weekend. Why not just do it? We got to keep him alive long enough to, you know, go to the business meeting at 8 a.m. Monday and so he can, you know, sign the investment.
Well, you know, I think somewhere along the line, somebody was like, we have to raise the stakes. Yeah. Somebody has to be able to murder them. So I think that was where that.
Oh, you know, okay. You think that was.
Yeah, I think that was. They would have said, well, you know, they just have to keep him alive long enough to make a deal. And then somebody goes, no, the stakes aren't high enough. You know, somebody's got to be able to kill him. You know, so
okay.
Where that came from, you know what I mean? And I see what your point, but I think that they were going like, that doesn't seem like it's going to be exciting enough or something.
They were like, they were on cocaine. I'm like, fuck, no, that's not exciting enough.
No, they gotta be murdered, man. Murdered.
Fuck. Oh. I don't know if that came through or not, but
it's the 80s.
Yeah, but it was, yeah, that's what's happening in this movie. Yeah.
And here's an interesting viewpoint. You're not a big fan of the movie, and I'm a decent fan of the movie. I wouldn't say that I'm gaga for Cocoa Puffs over this
Yeah.
movie, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty funny, and I've watched it multiple times and still laughed at it every time. And you say, not so much, right? You know, that it's not very funny. It's the paper-thin premise kind of falls apart for you.
I think, honestly, I know I could laugh at this premise or this material or this, like, idea. And if it was done well, I think the problem was just for me is A, the actors were not that.
You don't like the chemistry, yeah.
Yeah, and also I think if I didn't like the chemistry, I'm now going to look at the plot.
Right.
Really is just like a series of vignettes.
Right.
Or really just a series of gags.
Yeah, not even vignettes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to suspend an awful lot of disbelief in this movie. Like, you know, these people are never going to realize that Bernie's dead. His girlfriend is going to come over and manage somehow to have sex with him, you know, without blood pressure, you know.
Yeah, like without an erection. So.
Yeah, so you can't. It's kind of hard to maintain an erection if you have no blood pressure.
Okay. Yeah.
You know. So there are some really big things you have to overlook. You know what? I mean, they also did that in another cult classic. You remember, what is it?
Clerks?
Clerks. Yeah, Clerks, where she goes and has sex with a dead man in the bathroom. And then at the end, she finds out he was dead and she has a mental breakdown. Very kind of similar getup, in fact. You know, she goes into a dark room and has sex with a dead guy who somehow still magically has an erection, even though being dead.
I think The World According to Garp had someone in a coma with an erection.
Yeah, that's more believable because he is still, after all, alive.
Yeah, he's in a coma.
That's how Garp was conceived, in fact.
Right.
His mother was a nurse taking care of World War II vets that had mm-hmm. brain damage, and one was having cyclical erections at night, so she just took advantage.
Right.
And as the caretaker said, you raped a dying man?
Yep.
So anyway, tangent.
What else?
Our ED dysfunctional tangent.
Yeah. As far as a third Weekend at Bernie's or a reboot, I don't think I've heard anything.
I haven't heard anything, no.
I know there was a script at some point in the mid-90s about that got floated around for a Weekend at Bernie's 3, but obviously didn't get made. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any more things to say?
I would just sum it up in this way, that tastes are interesting things to have. Because here we have me, who enjoyed the film, and you were not so, you're more lukewarm to it.
Yeah, right? I'm more on the side of it's closer to an F than an A.
Right, and so now you're on the experience of what I experience when anybody starts talking about Family Guy or South Park. Those two really annoy the crap out of me. You know.
Okay.
And so there's that difference in taste that, you know, things are different. I'm not a fan of Family Guy, and you're not a fan of
Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's, and vice versa. You know. So things and I used to take these things kind of like, how could you ever. But, you know, taste is subjective. There is no universal art, you know?
Right. I mean, yeah.
Just because everybody at the Louvre says you have to like the Mona Lisa doesn't mean you have to fucking like the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. And honestly, it's not like the most despicable comedy I've seen in years.
Oh, there are some despicable comedies out there. Seth MacFarlane, I'm looking at you.
But I will say, you know, it's just kind of a... It feels like they had a great pitch in the room.
Yeah.
They sold it off of that. Yep. And then, you know, they were like, and then the weekend before filming, they were like, oh, fuck, we have to write the script.
Right.
Because they kept just selling it off of the pitch. They sold it all the actors off the pitch. And Terry Kaiser was like, that sounds funny.
Yeah.
You know, so they were everything got sold off of a pitch, and then like literally last minute they were like, oh shit, we have to come up with a premise.
Yeah, we've got a synopsis, we've got a log line, and we've got a letter of intent. Now what?
Yeah, fuck, let's film it. Let's go out to Wilmington, North Carolina, and film it.
Well, I mean, it's gorgeous. I mean, that is a gorgeous beach.
It is
North Carolina's the Outer Banks, awesome. Where they also filmed Knights and Rodanthe.
And they filmed One Tree Hill there. If you're CW diehard.
Lots of people are.
Yeah. And, I mean, they filmed Iron Man 3 there, of all movies. They filmed The Hunger Games, if you believe it.
Yeah. And Atlanta.
Oh, but everything's getting, like, everything that was going to be shot in North Carolina is being moved down here.
But that, you know, I'm not a big fan of that Nicholas Sparks guy.
Who is?
But The Knights of Rodanthea, that was Richard Gere and
Diane
Ladd. Was it? No, I can't remember.
It's whoever Martha Kent is now. Diane, not Keaton, but Diane. Oh my God, this is gonna kill me. Let me look it up real quick. Yeah.
Anyway, one thing I find interesting about that.
Diane Lane.
I was okay. Not Ladd. But they filmed it in the exteriors at an existing house in Rodanthe, in the actual town, and the beach washed away underneath it. The island was actually washing away. Global warming, you fuck faces. And so this
climate change.
Yes, climate change and global warming both. They're both the same, synonymous. But this couple came by with like $5 or $10 million and hoisted the house up out of the sea and yoinked it like a quarter mile back inland, back onto the island.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, that's incredible. That is like...
And they did not do like at Bernie's. They used the exteriors and then shot on a soundstage for the interiors on Rodanthe. Right. And when they did finish, these people, when they bought the house, they redecorated the entire house on the inside to look like the soundstage.
A lot of TV shows, I noticed, do that. Yeah. They'll do interiors on a soundstage in New York, and then if they have someone like walk out on a balcony, they'll just green screen it.
Or send a remote crew to get some plates or whatever, you know.
Or you know, if they're exteriors of the place, or if they're shooting exteriors, they'll just like matte composite the house, the actual house onto the location.
Right. CGI and crap.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what they do for Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, lots of action movies. You know, I mean. There was once upon a time when you were a wee lad, when CGI wasn't, you know, so integral to all filmmaking. Because now the superhero movies, especially post...
Even comedies use a lot of CGI.
Roughly around 99 or 2000, around the time that the Star Wars prequels started coming out, they've been using it to where you have pretty much something modified in every shot in a lot of movies. You know, that 90% of the movie has something CGI in every image. You know,
yeah, like an artificial light. And it's just little things. It's not like they added a dinosaur in the middle of a romantic scene.
But they are sometimes that. Yeah. You know, especially in the superhero movies where you have, you know, people flying around and Hulkses and things.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is they're just, you know, comedies.
Right, and so what is the difference? You have 90% of a movie is got CGI in every shot. How is that different than a CGI cartoon? You know, like a Pixar movie, you know?
They use actual cameras? I don't know. Well, yeah, I mean, now comedies, and we're getting to the end here. But you know, I was at the Terminus conference, and they were at the Crafty Apes visual effects panel. They even mentioned that you know, even comedies have like visual effects. I mean, comedies will have like 200 to 300 CGI shots.
Yeah, and it's become very common now for people when they notice something in post, they didn't notice, you know, something, a continuity error.
Right.
To paint a cup out or to paint the level of water in a glass up or something, you know.
Or if they need to, like, get rid of a logo because they didn't get the rights.
Permission, yeah. Or they have a cable or a crewman in the shot or something and you just paint them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, very common to do that nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, just shit happens and, you know. So, last thoughts on Weekend at Bernie's.
I enjoyed it. It was basically a gag delivery system, and I bit the bait. You know, I went for it. It's not Oscar-worthy material by any stretch of the imagination. You know, not Golden Globe, no Emmys or any such thing, even though this was a theatrical release, not a TV release. But
yeah,
you get the point.
Oh, yeah.
But I still don't think it's either Razzie-worthy either, too. I think there was some craft. Like I mentioned, there's some, you know, screwball comedy and some physical comedy in the first one, especially, that I appreciated. You know, like the multiple times that you see Bernie being washed out to sea or thrown off of balconies, or the dance number to Night on Bald Mountain that Andrew McCarthy and Polly have when they're tying him up with the phone cord, you know, and they're going around each other. That's very, very well, smoothly executed comedy gag piece.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I say, yes, watch Weaker Than Bernie's. It's funny. If you're like me, you will enjoy it.
I really try not to be overcritical. I mean, I saw that, you know, Tag movie last month.
Tag?
Yeah.
Explain. I don't think I've heard this one.
Oh, it's the one where a group of 30-something-year-old males, like Ed Helms, John Hamm. Okay,
yeah. I haven't seen that one yet.
I saw that movie, and, you know, it's a whatever premise like this one is. But still, like, I found it endearing. I found it, you know, lighthearted and comedy. So, I mean, I know how to laugh. I know how to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, some stickler in the mud or some stick in the asshole. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, like, my problem with Weekend at Bernie's, and I know, I didn't really quite enjoy Last Action Hero, which was, I think, technically was our last comedy we talked about.
Comedy, drama, actioner?
Yeah.
Awkwardly.
Well, a movie that people find funny.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's trying to be a comedy, a drama, and an action film at the same time.
You know? So I know how to laugh, but I mean, the thing is, I just don't care. I didn't care about the characters because, A, they were not. They kind of just dropped into the movie and. You know, I don't know. It just all felt. I couldn't get behind it. And while yes, you know, and for a movie that's a vignette of gags, it takes like 30 minutes before we get to the dead body in a hour and a half movie. So, I don't know. Maybe I am overthinking it. Although I think there is an interesting thing to say about Andrew McCarthy's character is like a reflection of like poor people have been just like trying so fucking hard. Like to, you know, get to the top, and when they finally get like a piece, they just become addicted to like cocaine addicts. I think there is something to say about that, but honestly, I just didn't care about this is the weaker tier of the franchises we covered, and we're gonna cover Free Willy soon, so
which is. Not as good a movie, guys.
No. Like, well, you know, I like Free Willy more than this movie.
Oh, yeah?
But I like it. I'll get into my reasons why, but I don't... I mean, I will get into my reasons why, but I mean, this was the lesser, and we're talking Free Willy next week. And Justin, I'm just going to go ahead and say, if you have seen the sequels already, we'll just, like, go through it, basically. We'll just talk to them in like reference, but we're just gonna just talk about Free Willy.
Concentrate on the first, the original Free Willy. Yeah,
because
there's like five or something.
There's like three.
Three. Well, there's four or five films together. I mean, I knew that they made a few.
So they made some straight to video.
I thought so. I mean,
I don't know.
Wikipedia.
We'll look that up later.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm.
Yeah. I just would like to, as closing, as you say, mention Tag. I saw another recent film. You seen Game Night?
Yeah.
Which I think is a similar kind of a thing, actually. I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed it for similar reasons.
Yeah, it was a fun movie.
It's also just a series of vignettes with gags.
But you still, there's still like an anchor to the characters.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie, surprisingly, a lot more than I thought I was going to. I actually appreciated Game Night, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that movie's more just David Fincher's The Game, but...
Actually
as a comedy.
Yeah. Yes.
As a comedy.
And actually interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I just thought it was a good movie. I thought this was kind of the lesser franchises. You know what we also should do in the next week or two, since it's, you know, going to be fresh? The Stakeout franchise.
Oh, with
Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
Was Emilio Estevez in that?
I think so. We'll find.
Yeah.
You'll find out.
I actually saw that in the theaters when I was a young man.
I think a lot of people did. The first one was a hit.
Yeah,
so.
Not, the second one, not so much. That one had Rosie O'Donnell in it, didn't it? The second one.
Yes.
Yeah. A little bit of different dynamic. You know, they kind of departed from the underground... forbidden romance, romantic comedy kind of thing from the first one.
Yep.
And went with Rosie O'Donnell yelling a lot.
Oh, Rosie O'Donnell.
Yep. And I have no issue with Rosie O'Donnell personally, but it's just a different thing they did in the second one, you know?
Yeah, me neither, but... So with that, I think we're going to close on this Weekend at Bernie's franchise. I think, we got
to
get out of here soon.
Time to go, people.
But thank you all for listening this week. Justin, everyone email you about your thing again.
Yeah, I'm going to restart the cardboard rocket this coming week. I'm going to do some pitch mock-ups, like poster mock-ups and some log lines for things. So next week... I'm going to start rounding up people to do like a production slash writing crew, the core, for my senior thesis.
Okay.
So this next week we're going to start this whole thing going. All right.
All right. And on that note, you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic, where I will post updates on, the show, and then you can follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Thanks for listening in this week. Next week, we'll talk about the Free Willy franchise. We'll talk about Free Willy, and then we'll kind of sort of talk about the sequels.
Yep.
And then sometime in the next week or two, we'll probably do Stakeout, and then we'll round it out with The Fugitive, I guess.
The Fugitive. That was also 93, huh?
That was. We're just doing it a little early because I'm kind of running out of movies to watch. Yep. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll
adios, guys.
Back with you soon.
And heading for the islands.
Whoa, downwind. Whoa, back out.
But they're about to discover...
Raise this man from the dead. He will lead you to where he has hidden the money.
That Bernie Lomax is more popular than ever.
Two guys, they're taking Bernie.
In the fridge where we put him.
You are in the power of the moon.
You were supposed to be here guarding Bernie.
Why would I have to guard a dead man stuck in a 2-foot refrigerator?
He's got style.
Where is he now?
You're so cute.
He's got charm.
How did you happen to meet old Bert?
In the conga line.
He's just got no soul.
I just saw a dead man walking on the bottom of the ocean.
Uh-oh.
But that never stopped Bernie.
Go!
He's our boss. He's dead. Don't worry about it.
From being the life of the party.
See, Arnold, he's not afraid of you. You're the bravest guy I've ever met.
Weekend at Bernie's 2. No one does dead like Bernie.